Welcome to the Half Hour Happy Hour. Your chance to sit back, have a drink, and listen to some insightful musings, funny anecdotes, the occasional rant, and an all-too-frequent Bruce Willis reference. Join Jen, Justin, and Jer in hoisting a beverage or three, picking apart topics of the day and explaining how things came to be the way they are. It's one part educational, one part bacchanal, best served over ice with a healthy dose of wit and a twist of cynicism.
Hey kids, because that's apparently how we start every episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Half Hour Happy Hour. We're so excited you're here. And today, we're going to talk about something that we always talk about, but that we haven't talked about, because it's interesting. But if you Google the words weird, unexplained, and awesome, hopefully one day we'll show up.
Hopefully.
And in keeping with that trend, today we're talking about unexplained, unsolved heists.
Because everybody loves a good heist.
Everybody does love it. How many times have you found yourself rooting for the bad guy? Raise your hand.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all the time.
That was the room, just in case you were wondering.
Three for three.
Go Hans Gruber.
Such a serious face when you did that.
And that's our Bruce Willis. Pump. That's our Bruce Willis reference right there.
It totally is. Wow. So speaking of Bruce Willis, let's have some beer.
From Flying Dog, I'm having the Old Scratch Amber Lager. It's an amber lager. It's very red. It's actually really good. It's got a multi mellow flavor. And you know, I was trying to place the finish. At first it was almost a coffee kind of flavor, but now it's almost, it tastes a little more honey. Like it's got a very sweet, smooth finish. So
how's the mouth feel?
It's good. My mouth feels good. It's got a good mouth feel. This one is 5.5 ABV, nothing super crazy, but pretty tasty. So I'm going to enjoy it. Jen, what are you drinking?
I am drinking Sam Adams because I love him and the people that work for him and his beer. It's another one of the Imperial series, which we adore. I adore. I don't know about you guys. Screw you guys.
No, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
They're Imperial Stout. And it's exactly what a stout should be. It is smoky and chocolatey and coffee-y. And it has those British hops that kind of balance out the bitterness. So it's delightful. It's exactly what a stout should be.
It looks like molasses. It's very
It does have a very tar color.
Yep.
There's no head on it.
Darn.
I took care of that. I did pour very slowly because I know stouts tend to be thick. It's not. I mean, they usually tend to have thick heads. I'm going to correct myself because stouts do not tend to be thick beers. Ooh, bad Jen. I poured it very slowly because they do tend to have thick heads, and this one does not. And I'm okay with that. I'm very impatient, and I usually put my face, my nose in my Guinness foam because I want the Guinness, but I don't like the head.
So you don't want a thick head underneath your nose?
Way to break that down, punk. True story. Wow. Jer, what are you drinking? Quickly, please.
Fort Collins Brewery Rocky Mountain IPA, which it's tasty. It's... an IPA. It starts off real floral, and then the bitterness from the hops just explode in your mouth, and it's a little over the top, but it's not bad. It's a good beer. I'm meh.
Yeah.
Like if I bought a six pack of it, I would drink six of them.
Right.
but not in a night.
Not necessarily something you'd order at a bar.
No.
Yeah.
No, once is enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's put them up. So, Jen, you got any interesting happy haps from the past couple of weeks?
Happy haps?
Happy haps.
I have a story I fell in love with. And first of all, the title's Weird Science, and that always makes me happy because Wired has a really great section for Weird Science. And Britain is introducing a rare spider back into the world.
Oh, that's a good...
It's a ladybug spider. Plan.
Ew. Yeah.
Wow.
When you see the pictures of it, you'll be able to understand why.
At least he's very bright, and you'll be able to see him coming, but...
Right. Why are they reintroducing it?
Because spiders are awesome and you guys suck. I mean, for real. Okay, so Lady Bird Spider has
Lady
like...
Lady Bird or
Lady
bug?
Bird. I'm sorry, Lady Bird. It's Lady Bird Spider. I just really wanted it to be Lady Bug Spider. My bad. They were like on the brink of extinction. There was only like 56 spiders in captivity in the UK. And they're introducing to this place, I think it's Arne's. Arne, A-R-N-E, Arne. It's like a preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the place is just filled to the brim with insects that are like on the verge of extinction, and it sounds like a place that you guys would never ever want to go, and I really want to go play.
Well, you
there's like a couple different butterflies, like the silver studded blue butterfly, there's a Purbeck Mason wasp, a bush cricket, Sorry.
Chirp, chirp.
That's so bad. How funny would that be if you made that noise when you walked? That's the dead giveaway that you're of the bush cricket family. Well,
I was going to make the bush cricket joke off of that, but you're right there.
I got you covered.
You're right there.
Chair, please save us again.
Oh. Well, we like defense-related news.
Oh, yeah. Always.
And it just so happens that all of the most expensive planes in our arsenal, these stealth fighters in the different flavors, the F-22, the F-35, mm-hmm. have all been grounded for so long due to a bad air system.
Okay.
Not rust. No, the issue is that apparently the way the air system runs to cool the pilots was gathering engine gases and pushing it through the holes, the hose.
Good.
Yeah, that causes a little problem. So they grounded all these planes until they could figure out how to re-engineer that aspect of them.
Good plan.
Yeah, the problem is you have to fly X number of sorties per week as a pilot to maintain your flight status.
Oh.
The problem is the entire fleet has been grounded for so long. So
nobody knows how to fly these planes anymore.
Literally, they're about to all become uncertified, including the instructors. So the instructors are going to have to get recertified to recertify everybody else. Well,
who's
going to
do the recertifying?
Well, and that's kind of one of the questions. Right. Is, you know, there's some guy at the DOD. And
it's going to be the high guy that's been testing the planes every time. And he snuffs like so much fuel that he's going to be like, all right, dudes, this is how you do this. Let's do it.
There's a 3-month backlog on the simulator.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't. These guys are sitting around going, just put me in a plane. Huh. Like, it doesn't matter. I'll worry about the oxygen later. Just get me back on point. But each one of these planes is, you know, several $100 million.
Right.
So, yeah, they're just sitting there in the sun.
Yeah, of course.
Are you sure they're not being air conditioned?
Oh, they may well be.
Yeah.
Bastards.
They have to get protected from the elements. I'm sure they're very well kept.
Yeah, we don't want rust.
Nope.
Right. So let's go really far from Earth for our next story.
Lovely.
Shall we? I've been checking out space nudes because, of course, this will probably air in a few weeks, so I'm dating us a little bit, but the Perseids were this weekend. It was a little cloudy here, so not too much meteor shower action here. But the Hubble telescope photographed the Necklace Nebula, and it looks like a string of emeralds, and I want it. So there's that. Pluto now has 14 neighbors.
I don't care
neighbors.
If it's a nebula. I want it. I want it now.
I want the whole world. Anyway, yeah, so Pluto has new neighbors. Did you know there's like 14 Plutos now?
Yeah, all those.
Well, 15 if you're going to include Pluto in the Pluto count.
Dwarf planets out there. Yeah.
Yeah, so they discovered a couple more now. Throw those in there.
We should go mine them.
Planets?
Sure, why not?
Dwarf planets?
Yeah. They're probably a good source of, you know, water, ice, maybe.
Stuff, maybe.
Stuff, who knows?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's Funk's prediction. Let's just go take whatever
there's
they have.
There's stuff there. Let's just go get it. Doesn't matter what it is.
No, we can't, because if we bring it back, it'll make Jer fat.
Right.
Yes. We're opposed to that.
Relative, Jeremiah. Relative. Uh-huh. Also coming from space was a recent, was it missile? The shuttle launched a missile.
It's less a missile. It's a first response vehicle craft.
But it's supposed
to call it.
Whatever it is.
Wait, what did the military call
it? It's designed to do, what, Mach 20, something like that, yes. I think I saw?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mach 20, 13,000 miles an hour. Or 3.6 miles per second?
Ridiculous.
Jesus.
Yeah. So basically, I think they said from, what was it, L.A. to, no, New York to Beijing, maybe,
uh-huh.
was like 20 minutes. And that's including your launch into space, right. And then firing back down.
Wow.
Problem is, people can't survive. I mean, this is just
you can't live through those G's.
No.
Right.
No.
Hypersonic Technology Vehicle 2. That's what it was.
Yeah. That.
HTV2.
It's awesome. And
so what happened to this cool little thing?
Oh, we lost it.
Wow. Oh.
Well, it's not so much.
Again.
We didn't lose it.
We just didn't know where it was for a while.
We know where we left it.
But as we all know, knowing where you left it is not necessarily where it still is.
Did nobody put one of those whistle things on it so you can hear it
like
chirping?
The Nerf?
Yeah. It like, doesn't... like for your keys, like you push the button, you can hear them.
Oh, I was thinking like the Nerf footballs that whistle as they're coming down.
At Mach 20.
Seriously.
They just hear a roar.
They did this last time.
It would only work once. Yeah.
This was the second attempt. No. The first one was last April, I think. And they got 9 minutes worth of recordable data from that one before it just...
Lost?
Gone. I mean, they don't know where. They don't know...
That kind of, you know...
And so they're like, oh, we got this. We spent another year on this. We've tightened it up. No problem. Oops. They got 9 minutes of retrievable data.
But wait. Here's the best part. There's a quote by DARPA's director. Sorry, DARPA. She quotes... We'll learn, we'll try again, that's what it takes. But that was after the test when they only had like so much recoverable data. Before the test, they said this would be the last HTV-2 flight that the agency would run. So, balls.
Yeah. You know, I think I have a problem with them launching ballistic things at Mach 20 and then losing track of them.
You think you might have a problem with
like,
that?
Like, I don't want to be standing in a field, and all of a sudden, whack!
I don't think it would just whack.
No.
Why are you in a field, too?
I don't know. Watching the Perseids meteor shower, whatever. I don't know.
Good save?
Yeah.
That's actually a really good save.
Whoa, that one's going really fast.
Oh, shit.
At that point, you might as well stand and watch it. Be mesmerized. Joe Rogan, does your mind even let you see that?
Yeah, right.
Awesome.
There is a new app for smartphones that will allow them to talk to each other in case the cell network goes down.
Ooh, okay.
Yes, kind of high speed.
Listen to how excited he was.
Well, that'll...
We had a discussion about this a while back.
Right.
And yeah, so now they use it. It uses Bluetooth right now, so it's fairly close contact. But if you've got a message, you're trying to send a message from your phone to somebody else, it will actually ping all the other phones.
I love it.
And then as they move around, they ping other phones until the message finds its
cool. It's a mesh network.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's taken them this long to do that with as, you know, draconic as the carriers have gotten.
It's it's called Autobahn.
Nice.
Of course it is.
Very cool. So it's good to hear that because I have an interesting news story. This happened on Thursday, the 11th of August is it? Yes. So San Francisco's Bay Area Rapid Transit, their BART system, they actually shut down cell phone service to their stations on that Thursday to thwart a planned protest. So they have these cell towers that provide cell phone service to their underground stations, and they shut off the service so that the protesters could not organize.
Interestingly, there was a flash mob to go off at the same time, right. And they couldn't communicate.
Yeah, so
it didn't go off.
This is
what we're planning on the flash mob / protesters part. Do we know what they were protesting?
So this whole thing was done in the name of public safety, you know, and it's obviously drawn some criticism from the EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, and the ACLU, because it's, you know, limiting free expression. You can't just shut off. You know, and they're drawing comparisons between what happened earlier this year in Egypt with Mubarak,
right,
and you know, shutting off the internet, that kind of stuff. So it's pretty big, you know, Big Brother kind of stuff happening here on local shores.
I'm impressed BART has that kind of
sway.
Capability.
Well,
like they just walked up and unplugged a bunch of cell
phones. They're apparently a fairly serious organization. This demonstration was actually going to be the second protest over the fatal shooting of Charles Blair Hill by BART police on July 3rd. I did the research. Charles Blair Hill was an apparently homeless older man who was fatally shot by BART has their own police force, was shot by these officers. At 9:45 p.m. July 3rd, two officers responded to the call of a man drinking from a liquor bottle in the Civic Center station, seemingly in danger of falling off the platform. So, you know, they went there to help this guy.
Right. He wasn't threatening anyone.
No. Just a danger to himself.
Right.
They say, you know, onlookers say it only took a minute between when the officers got to the scene to escalate to them shooting this guy. The police say he was drinking out of a vodka bottle, tossed it at the officers, and then pulled a knife on them. He wouldn't put the knife down, so they shot and killed him.
Okay.
So, three bullet casings were recovered from the scene. So, three shots in response to a knife.
Three
from
shots to where?
A drunk guy.
Because if it's a if it's three shots from one gun, that's a triangle, and that means they were trying to kill him. And you're going to kill a drunk guy with a knife,
right,
on the edge of a subway platform?
Exactly. I mean, why do subway police have guns in the first place? I mean, this stuff is.
In San Francisco, I can sort of justify that a little bit.
Well, so it's interesting. This is actually the fifth BART police killing. They've shot five people over the past several years. And, you know, I'll post the link to some of these incidents. And they're all pretty dubious circumstances. There was one kid who, you know, they had him handcuffed and face down and shot him, basically assassination style. There's one guy who allegedly fell after he was taken into police custody. Like, there's a lot of really
was taken into police custody.
Yeah.
Fell in, like, onto the tracks, down and died.
I don't know what kind of. It didn't have that information. Just that he allegedly fell after he was taken into police custody.
Wow.
So there's, pretty interesting stuff. And to hear some of the eyewitnesses to some of these things, a lot of it sounds a little bit racially charged.
I'm just saying, it's a fairly walkable city. So if you're visiting San Francisco, take a cab or walk.
Quote unquote notorious for being like accepting of all sorts of different people, though. Like, San Francisco supposed to be like the biggest melting pot in the U.S.?
Supposed to be.
It's supposed to be.
I know. I'm sorry. Melting pot isn't correct anymore. It's salad.
Is it really?
Yeah, melting pot. Everything blends together, and you can't separate them out again. So the PC term is salad. Lots of stuff easily separatable again. I don't know how I feel about that part.
Yeah, because then it implies, oh, it's easy to just pick out the onions or the tomatoes. Like, I don't want that. Let's segregate that off to the side over here so I don't have to deal with it.
It should be noted that Funk doesn't like tomatoes or onions particularly. So I'd be interested in knowing what races you associate with onions and tomatoes.
I wasn't making any kind of, no, nothing like that.
I stopped and I thought about that. I was like, are any races associated with onions and tomatoes? No, I think that's a safe comment. Yep, okay, good. Yay, me.
Now, if I would have said crouton, then, oh, no.
Don't make fun of my white bread heritage.
So that's a scary bit of Big Brother-ishness.
That's crazy.
Yep. Made absurd by the salad. Good. Yep.
So we take a break, get another beer, and come back and talk about some stuff that got stoled.
Stoled. Yep. I like it.
Hi, kids. Justin here, and I just wanted to take a minute to thank you all for listening to the Half Hour Happy Hour. If you've had half as much fun listening to it as we've had making it, well, then we've had twice as much fun making it as you've had listening to it. If you'd like to get more from us, you can check us out on Facebook at the Half Hour Happy Hour. We're also on Twitter at the HHHH. And, of course, the web, www.thehalfhourhappyhour.com. Thanks for listening. Back to the show.
Welcome back, kids. Today we're going to talk about missing booty, I think is the best way to describe this.
Yeah, I think it's a good one.
Yes. different stories from different time periods, all having the same thing, all involving the same basic premise of...
Somebody lost their booty.
Yeah, somebody lost the booty. And
I hate when that happens.
Or actually, probably more accurately, somebody stole the booty.
Well, somebody originally stole the booty, and then it was misplaced.
Okay.
But by the sins of time,
the
I guess.
The booty has never been recovered.
Right.
They were never able to get their hands back on the booty.
I've got so much Parliament going through my head right now.
No, you kids have fun with this one.
So, in 1971, on a dark and stormy night, our story begins. When this nobody from nowhere, seemingly, man who's since been named D.B. Cooper, but we don't know that that's his real name, held hostage an airliner until he was given parachutes and $200,000 in cash, only to take off again and jump out of the airplane right around 20,000 feet, never to be heard from again, and only a few of the bills have ever been found.
Hmm.
Nothing ever entered circulation again.
Like, by a few, there was like what?
Like $60.
Yeah. Wow. No, it was more than that, but it was like literally there was a photograph of the demolished $20 bills, and it was less than $200.
Yeah. And it was a little kid who found them.
Wait, no, that was the little kid found like 580.
Oh, well.
5,000 something. It was like a decent chunk of money for the time period, but at the same time, like, 200,000.
Was this money that was found in circulation, or just was
found?
It was found.
Mutilated, right.
In
like
the Pacific Northwest.
Water, okay. Damage and dirt and all sorts of neat stuff.
But no parachute was ever found. No body was ever recovered. I mean, there were a couple of things that were left on the plane. But
he demanded 4 parachutes. Did he jump with all 4? Because I wasn't able to find that.
I don't know, actually.
Because I was like, well, if you know it's just you, why would you demand 4 parachutes? Because you're not trying to throw anybody off because you released all the hostages. So you can't, like, try to make people believe that there were 4 of you because there were eyewitnesses.
Right.
So the only other reason for demanding 4 parachutes is, one, he was crazy and thought 3 of them might be faulty. Not so good. Or he was going to jump with several of them and throw people
strap
off.
Strap some of them to the loot, maybe. I don't know.
$200,000 is not nearly...
It was in 20s.
Yeah, but still, you've worked in a bank. $200,000 in 20s is not a lot of money.
It's a shoebox.
It's a bag. Huh. You're not going to need to strap a parachute to it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's interesting. That hadn't even occurred to me. Did you read that the backup, the reserve chute that he used was broken? It was sealed shut, so it could not be used anyway?
Nice.
Yeah. Apparently, this was a test by the FBI to see if he knew anything about parachutes at all.
Okay.
To see
so they gave him faulty parachutes.
Yes.
Yeah. All 4?
Well, no. I think they had sutured shut all of the reserves. Just the reserves, because a parachutist would recognize it and say something.
Right.
And he apparently never said anything about it, so it was assumed he was not a paratrooper, which was one of the things that were going on, because nobody else jumps out of a 20,000-foot high aircraft.
Unless they know what they're doing.
But they basically established that, no, he likely did
not
know.
It doesn't seem that hard.
Well, in theory,
no. Yeah, you jump out and you're going to hit the ground one way or another. It's pretty simple.
But any aircraft over 10,000 feet has to have oxygen on board.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have oxygen tanks.
Okay.
And he's jumping at twice that altitude. So the likelihood is he would have blacked out for the first 15,000 feet. Once he recovered, he could have pulled the ripcord if he hadn't done so already.
Right.
But, I mean, it's one of those things. I would love it if he survived. I would even love it if he lost the money and still...
Lived
and that would just be cool.
But the most likely scenario is he splattered.
Yeah, he splattered someplace. Yeah. Whether he was impaled on a fir tree or, I mean, they've never found any body or remnants
and
of it.
And that's what's begs the question is, you know, they never found any remains. They must have known, I'm sure, the approximate area where he would have jumped. They must have known.
I mean, think about it. It depending 20,000 feet
at
that,
night.
That, yeah.
In the rain.
Regardless of night or day, but in the rain when there was, I mean, not crazy wind, but significant wind.
Right.
So if he jumped out and depending on where he could have pulled the cord or anything like that, I mean, you have no idea. It's a giant target. And on top of that, most of it's forested. So he could have hit trees and been completely dismembered by the time he got to the ground.
And likely would have.
Once you got to the ground, hello bears.
Bears. So how much did he make off with? $200,000?
$200,000 that some bear is wandering around with. Some wicked Washington bling.
Yep.
But yeah, this is 40 years later.
Huh.
And they just ran a new set of DNA tests on a posthumous possibility.
Okay.
And it came back negative. But
DNA it was tests
some,
off of...
Some woman who was like, my uncle... This is the best part, because this is way most... They like have investigated 1,000-plus suspects.
Well, wouldn't you take a little credit...
Would I, as a woman who have come forward and said, I am D.B. Cooper? No. So this particular woman was not quite that batshit nuts and said that she believed it was her uncle, L.D. Cooper, or something like that. D.L., I don't know, whatever. Based on conversations that she overheard when she was 8 years old. And now she's like some middle-aged woman who was like, yeah, that was D.B. Cooper, B.T. Dubs.
Where did they come up with that name, D.B. Cooper?
They believed his name was Dan Cooper, and I don't know who actually coined the name, but it's not based. They don't even know that was his real name from the get-go.
Okay.
So it just kind of...
Just stuck.
Stuck, yeah.
A little catchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never knew too much about that story. I mean, I obviously heard it in passing, but...
There's great songs written about it. Bunch of stories, movies based off of what happened if he survived, from all number genres.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's one of my favorite stories about somebody who may have gotten away with it.
Right.
But the other side of that is I'm the guy who always wants to believe that there's something out there to find.
Right.
the day we find the last pirate treasure,
right.
I'm going to cry.
Right. Cool. So what other interesting interesting unsolved thefts do we have?
I was absolutely fascinated by the Antwerp Diamond Heist. Have you guys heard of this bad boy?
Nope. It's got an interesting name, though.
Wait, Antwerp. I don't know who names names a town. Maybe it means something. I don't care. I didn't look that part up.
It's silly, and that's all that matters.
So, okay, this place is in, I don't even know what country it's in. It doesn't matter. Look it up. Google it. It's good for you. This is where 80% of the world's diamonds circulate.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if that statistic is still accurate, but there's still a shite ton of diamonds, like, wandering in and out. Finished, unfinished, cut, raw, all sorts of diamonds coming in and out of the city. And there's this giant vault where, you know, safe deposit boxes, where dealers and whatever else, because a lot of, obviously, you know, if you have that much traffic, there's a lot of dealers. It's particularly Jewish and Indian. That, you know, this town is very much populated by these dealers that have these boxes, some of which is reported, some of it is, you know, kind of under the table handshake deals, but excuse me, regardless, this is where a lot of diamond traffic happens. So let's knock it over, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, there's this minor crook.
Totally easy.
His name, I'm gonna have to sound this out. Notar Bartolo. His first name is Leonardo, so we're going to go with that. Leonardo.
Leo.
Not a turtle. Leo. I like it. Okay, I hadn't thought of that one. The turtle. Leo the turtle. Italian turtle, I think. Becomes a notorious, like, charmer. And eventually kind of evolves. Like, I guess he made his first theft at, like, 8 years old when he knocked over, like, a sleeping ice cream man or something. Equally as absurd. I'm not even joking. Like, this guy just realized, like, this is what I was born to do. So he became, like, kind of the con man charmer dude. And at some point, they called it, like, the Torin School, Torin, something like that. He had all these different guys with all these different specialties and would assemble all these different teams for heists.
Mm-hmm.
The most notorious of which, and the one that he's currently serving time for. I just ruined the ending. Uh-huh. I'm just kidding. Was this Antwerp. He started working in there, kind of following different jewelers, different dealers to learn their habits and whatever else. And eventually he was approached by this guy who was like, I want to knock over the safe deposit box. Now, Leo had a box there because that was kind of part of his, I'm a dealer and I'm posing a dealer front. So, you know, he uses like this, you know, breaking technology. And this happened, I don't remember what year. I'll find it. 2005, 2007. Something like that. Somewhere in there.
So not too long ago.
Tiny, tiny camera. Snapping pictures and whatever else. And takes pictures for this dealer. Brings it back. And, you know, he tells the dealer, like, it's impossible to rob this place. You can't do it. And the dealer's like, we'll see. And it's months and months and months before he hears from him again. And he comes back. Brings him into this warehouse. Lifts, like, you know, the black sheets and everything that you totally see in movies. And here's a replica of the safe. And they're like, we totally can do it.
This really sounds like a movie. I mean, I've seen this one before.
Yeah.
It's not Ocean's Eleven. That's what I thought. I'm like, this article, like, that I read, I was just enthralled by it. It was like 10 pages long, and I'm just reading all this stuff like, this is awesome. This is Ocean's Eleven. It's not, though. So here's the big thing. It has 10 points of security, a combination dial that has 100 million different possibilities, and you have to look through it through this tiny little, like, you know, lens. Once you get through that, there's a keyed lock, there's a seismic sensor, so the door's built to withstand 12 hours of drilling. But if you, like, put a drill to it, the alarms are going to go off. There's a lock steel grate inside, a magnetic sensor that if you break, sets the alarm off. There's two security cameras both on inside and outside. There's a keypad for the disarming. There's a light sensor, so you can't have any light inside the room. And then a heat and motion sensor. Right?
Okay.
Where's the problem?
Yeah.
I thought you said this was a challenge.
And the elevator goes down with all the lasers and everything. No, this is crazy. Like, their team was very, very small. It was that Leo, it was a man named the Genius, the Monster, the King of Keys.
I love it.
Pimp. The King of Keys. And the great thing is, apparently all these guys are kind of young dudes, and the King of Keys is like somebody's grandfather. Not really, but like,
seriously,
that
seriously, this sounds like a movie.
I'm not even joking. This is not a movie yet. We should make this movie.
But I'm saying I would not be surprised if like Ocean's 11 or something was inspired by this. But I guess
no.
If this was
because Ocean's 11 was a remake.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was from the 50s.
Yeah. Huh. So maybe this was inspired by the
movie.
All right. So the last dude of the crew is some guy named Speedy, who Leo totally vouched for, and who later totally screwed everything up. But here's the fun part. So they go in and they get past all of this crazy security because, like, the genius can get past any security system and the monster's like the brute. And the King of Keys is a master forger, except they didn't even need a forger because the key was hanging inside a closet because one of the dudes is retarded.
That's always the weakest point of the system is the meat
the
bag.
The dude, yep. The meat bag. It's ridiculous. Well, they had a forgery. And I guess nobody knew that they had a forgery. Like, this was completely unsolved until a couple years ago when, what's his face? No, I'm sorry. This probably happened in the early 2000s because Leo got sentenced to a 10-year prison sentence because he was affiliated with it. And I'll get to that in a minute. They still can't actually prove who did it. They're, like, suspect of who the genius and the monster are. They have no idea who the King of Keys is, which is why I want to be him. The King of Keys. I mean, come on. That's like the
pretty pimp.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So anyway, they get through all this stuff. Like,
he probably pulls some serious ass. I can unlock that. I like the horrified look on your face. I got the key you're looking for.
There's no gatekeeper keymaster joke here.
No, that's too easy.
I'm like waiting for it. I'm like mortified, expecting Zool. No. Fine. So anyway, using like hairspray and a master forger and a ridiculous like electronics guy, they get into this vault. They clear it out in the dark. They are packing bags so full of diamonds and gold bars and currency that they don't even see it, and they resist the urge to really look. Because it's just like process. They only switch on the light, like they covered the light sensor, but they only switch on the light so that they can drill into the boxes. So that they're pulling out all this stuff. They have no idea what it is. Based on calculations, they figured they'd take about $100 million worth of stuff, which is what police records later said as well. They get out, they all go their separate ways, and they rendezvous at a later point. Leo's in the car with his buddy Speedy, who he totally vouched for, even though everybody was like, I don't know, but this guy's kind of jumpy. Speedy tweaks out, like, while they're driving down the road, and they have, like, a garbage bag full of all the incriminating evidence, like all the maps and writings and whatever else, and they're going to go burn it. Speedy tweaks out, makes him pull the car over. Differing stories say that Leo went out into the woods to kind of scout a little bit and came back, and Speedy had just strewn, like, diamonds and, you know, litter all over the place. Supposedly later found by this guy and his two weasels while they were out rabbiting. So this is how he got, like, he made, you know, purchases and rental equipment that would have made him very suspicious for a bank robbery. And right. He was a known con man. So he got 10 years for being associated with, but they were never able to prove anything else. The other thing that they connected with, this is the best part. The other thing they connected it with was a particular brand of Italian salami that had been eaten and the trash was left. And there was a timestamp on a receipt. I was like, dude, busted over salami.
Busted by the salami. Yeah.
So police reports said $100 million, and that's what they interpreted they took in the dark. Later on, when they opened bags, like, bags were empty, and they only took, like, $20 million worth of stuff. And then it was, like, this big thing of, oh, was it an insurance scam where the dealer, who nobody knows who that is,
right,
came to Leo and was like, hey, you guys should knock this place over, warned his friends to get their stuff out so they could collect the insurance money, even though it wasn't there anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, a $20 million tank versus a $100 million tank, most of it is still, like, most of the $20 million, depending on how much you think it was, but most of the $20 million is still unaccounted for.
Huh.
And this guy was, like I said, serving his sentence in prison, and just all of a sudden, like, 7 years into his prison sentence was like, hey, come talk. I'll tell you over 14 visits, you know, what you want to know.
Oh, really?
I mean, yeah, statute of limitation. What is the statute of limitation? Isn't it 7 years?
Well, he was in Belgium, so...
Short. Okay, so this was after the statute was up that he spilled the beans.
I'm not sure how all that works because I didn't research laws. Right.
I know it's fairly short. I think it is only 7 years.
Well, it depends on what it is.
Because I have another one that's related, you know, after the statute of limitation. So this is in Japan, 300 million yen was stolen from four Nihon Trust bank workers. So they were transporting this money for this bank in the trunk of their car.
Nice and safe.
Nice and safe. They were stopped by a motorcycle policeman who claimed that their manager's house had been blown up and they suspected that there was dynamite on the car. This was a credible claim because apparently this guy had sent threatening letters to the manager's house beforehand to make it seem like a plausible scenario. So got these workers out of the car, told him to, you know, back up while he inspected it, got underneath the car. The employee saw smoke start to come out, so the police officer told them to run to safety. They ran away. He gets in and drives off with the car.
This would totally work.
Yeah.
Apparently it was just, you know, he just lit like a signal flare underneath the car to make it, you know, to scare them, drove off.
So I need some postage stamps and a smoke bomb to rob how many yen?
300 million.
Okay, noted.
So to date, this crime has not been solved. This happened in December 10th, 1968. They never solved it, despite the fact that they found over 100 pieces of evidence at the scene of the crime. The problem with that was a lot of this evidence was apparently planted by the guy who, you know, just to throw them off the scent.
Brilliant.
They wound up with over 100,000 suspects, the leading one being a 19-year-old son of a cop who, 5 days after the theft, apparently committed suicide by potassium cyanide.
Like you do.
Right.
When you get away with it?
He had no alibi. He was the lead suspect. But they never recovered the money. And so this happened in 68. The statute of limitations was up in, I think it was 75. Still to this day, never recovered the money. Nobody has come forth with any information.
Isn't that crazy?
Nothing. They did have, several years ago, they did have one possible lead from a friend of the kid who did it. Was arrested on an unrelated charge, had a sizable sum of money that he wasn't willing to explain how he got it. However, he had an airtight alibi for the night of the crime, and, you know, that was pretty much it. You know, it's past the point where they can do anything about it.
But, right.
You know, he wasn't willing to admit to it or anything like that. So this is still unsolved. Somebody walked away with 300 million yen scot-free. Or maybe killed himself, you know.
I wonder what 300 million yen is in U.S. dollars, though.
I don't know, but it's definitely a lot.
Okay.
It's
just interesting.
No, I just looked up. Mine happened in February of 2003, so not that long ago.
Okay.
I'm now looking up 300 million yen.
Yep. Thanks. Look that one up. While you're doing that, I've got another one. This is a museum, the Gardner Museum art theft. This one happened in 1990, March 18th.
Interruption.
Yep.
Just about 3 million.
Okay. So still,
but in 68.
Yeah, in 68, right. Not bad. So so this was an art museum in Boston. Two thieves posing as Boston police officers gained entry into the museum by telling the guard on duty that they were responding to a call. The guard on duty broke protocol by letting these two police officers in through the security door.
Oh, I read this one.
At that point, they were able to get the security officer to come from around the desk where the alarm is by saying they recognized him from an arrest warrant. So once they had him from around the desk, they told him to summon the other guard who was on duty, proceeded to handcuff them, take him down to the basement, tie him up to where they were, you know, found the next morning. Walked away with 13 works of art valued at approximately $200 million.
Nice.
And some of this stuff was really
200 or 300?
200 million is what it said.
I read an article that said 3. The title of the article was "Always Ask for a Badge."
Yeah, right. But I mean, some of this stuff was really rare. Like, there were several pieces by Rembrandt, some actual like sketches that he had done, like real, you know, not finished work, but real rare, valuable pieces. To this date, never been solved. They're currently, it's still being investigated. They're offering a $5 million reward for information.
Oh, yeah.
Leading to the recovery. In 2005, there was an investigation into it possibly being linked to the mob that, you know, never really went anywhere.
I'm sure.
There was, they had arrested two mobsters for something else. And one of them was kind of coyly hinting that he, you know, knew where the art was, but, you know, nothing real serious, something that they obviously followed up on, but another unexplained theft, you know.
Well, but with artwork, I think a lot of it ends up in private collections anyway,
right.
So you won't see it again for generations.
Exactly. It'll show up, in 100 years.
Oh, yeah, exactly. There'll be an auction and it'll, hey, wait a second.
Yeah, exactly.
This is reported stolen.
No, it was like Rembrandt and Degas,
yep.
And yeah, it was crazy, and it was like St. Patrick's Day, right?
March 18th is that?
Yeah, well, St. Patrick's Day is on March 17th, so it was okay. Like 1 a.m. on March 18th, huh. So it was like, While everybody's out getting hammered.
Right.
Good plan.
Good plan, yep. And so both of those stories, people posing as police officers, so...
Always, ask for a badge.
But even then, I mean, they can fake badges. It's, I don't know. It's
don't their badges have ID numbers on them?
Yeah, but you can make...
Yeah.
Yeah, but ask them while you're looking at their badge, if you ask them what their ID number is.
Right. Ooh. There you go.
Sneaky.
Yep.
My daddy told me that one.
Yep. And then they shoot you. Yeah. I think I'd rather be tied up in the basement.
And honestly, that's, you know, they tell you a lot, even when you're getting pulled over, you know, they always tell you to, you know, don't just trust the cop. But really, in practice, if you question a cop like that, they're going to have a negative response.
No, that's not true. I've asked to see a badge before.
Yeah, sometimes you can get away with it, but sometimes you're not going to.
No, I mean, granted, like if I'm, you know, robbing a bank or something, I'm not going to. Excuse me, officer, can I see your ID and expect him to be pleasant with me? But like, I've been pulled over and it was in the middle of nowhere. It was literally in the middle of the state in Highlands County. Middle of nowhere, cop pulls me over on my birthday. And I was like, you know, if you don't mind, officer, like I kept my window cracked open and I was like, do you mind if I see your badge and whatever else? Because like, there was no traffic at all. Like, I could have died there if that was not a cop.
That's definitely a smart move. Because you're completely within your legal right to do that.
Actually, you're within your legal right to drive to a place that you feel comfortable.
Right.
So if I wanted to drive 5 miles down the road and wait until I got into a gas station, he probably would have been less pleasant with me at that point. But
still, if he reacts to that, though, I mean, if he takes that out on you, that's he's not allowed to do that. You're within your legal right to do that. Mm-hmm. So granted, if you're, you know, maybe have any other minor infractions, he's going to be less lenient on those. So try to keep as squeaky clean as possible. But the alternative is possibly dying. So I think.
Yeah, I think that weighs out for me.
Right. Yeah.
I like living.
Yeah. Living is good. Dying, not as good. So do we have any other cool ones?
I don't know, Captain Obvious, do we? I'm sorry. No. That was a little mean.
I'm waiting for your wrap up, to be perfectly honest. Yeah.
So I have a list of the six greatest beer thefts, which, you know, I figured is perfectly appropriate for this show.
Absolutely.
Because we all love beer and it's a tragedy to see it get stolen, but
And I'm sure not recovered.
Good work for the people who stole it, I guess. And some of these stories are definitely not, you know, great epic tales of thievery like we've been discussing.
So first they rebuilt the ABC.
So the first one, they reconstructed the beer cave there is one here about not stealing beer from a convenience store, though, so we will get to that.
Okay.
But this first one happened October 09 on an Air Canada flight from Vancouver to Alberta. They had to make an emergency landing when a disturbance was caused by a 28-year-old man who stole several beers off of the cart. And he tried to get away with it by flushing the empties down the toilet.
Wait.
Okay, hold on. No, let's just go. Two things everyone should know. One, never try to steal the beer. Take the little whiskey bottles and liquor bottles because they're easier to palm.
Right.
Two, they're also easier to hide in the little pouch in front of you. Don't try to flush the empties. Just hide the empties.
And three, if you're on a plane, you've got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Don't do anything stupid.
Right. Unless you're D.B. Cooper.
Right.
How drunk do you need to be off stolen alcohol to think that you can flush empty beer bottles?
Right. And how much have you already spent on the airplane alcohol to get to that level? Because those are not cheap.
It's just... Justification, I've spent this much and I should buy one, get one free?
Ones, yeah.
What?
So this next one, this is probably my favorite one on the list because it's a little ridiculous. So this one was in, August of 2004. The world's top beer label expert was jailed for 18 months after he stole 28 labels from the National Archives in London. This guy was a well-respected member of the community.
And klepto.
Published author on beer labelology and founder of the Labelologist Society. He had over 30,000 labels in his collection. He was working at the archives as a label expert, and his obsession with beer labels led him to steal about, you know, 28 of these rare labels. Labologist. He started basically the beer labology field.
I am baffled on so many different levels. First of all, he convinced somebody that
he's a label expert.
He's a label expert, and they went, "All right, we need one of those." Yeah. Then to collect 30,000 labels.
Mm-hmm.
30,000.
I wonder if he likes beer.
Yeah, is a little
or labels.
Got a screw loose.
Well, he clearly likes labels, but I wonder, like, wouldn't it be great if he's like, "I hate the taste of beer."
Oh yeah, beer's
can't
nasty.
Stand stuff.
Beer's nasty, but the labels. Oh,
did you
the
happen
labels.
To look up at Jared Mai's face like while you were reading that story? Because he and I were both just sitting there looking at it, like, wait, what?
Yep. Like I said, it's a little off the wall.
What can I be an expert in right now?
Well, apparently labelology, because that guy's in jail.
Yeah, there's an opening.
There's an opening.
No, I want to do something cooler than that. I want to work on that.
We'll,
okay.
What's
we'll find you something. It's probably going to be related to the bush cricket.
I don't even know what to say to that.
You could be the world's foremost bush cricket mating call sounder person. I don't know.
Yes. Ologist.
Ologist, yes.
For those of you who can't see me, I'm not fat enough that my thighs whistle when I walk. Thank you.
I'm just going to leave that one alone.
You better.
So moving right along. So this one happened in, July of 07. Three men in Missouri stole beer from a convenience store. One of the men was the driver. One of them was doing the stealing. The other one was distracting the clerk with a naked hula dance.
I'm sorry, what?
A naked hula dance. They have security footage of this guy doing a naked hula dance to distract the clerk while his buddy stole beer. And then they hopped in the car and drove away.
Wow.
Got to be something to be said for ingenuity on that.
Yeah,
one.
Like we've got nothing but a car.
Literally.
Distract him. Go.
I'm trying to picture these three guys in a car on the way to the convenience
naked.
Store. And they're like, okay, how are we going to divvy up these gigs?
All right, clearly the guy who's driving.
One, two, three, shoot.
No, I can tell you exactly how
this happened. I
always
have to be the naked hula dancer.
If there are three guys in the car, one's driving the car, in which case he's the driver.
Right.
One is the cool dude and he's sitting in the front seat. And homeboy who gets stuck sitting bitch is the one that's hula dancing. I mean, who are you kidding?
All right, so let's see, next on this list. And this actually wasn't so much a theft, more of a trend. So in 2007, the price of strap stainless steel skyrocketed. And there was a rash of kegs not getting returned to beer makers. It's estimated they lost up to $50 million due to customers not returning kegs. This is due to the typical deposit on a keg was about $20 to $30, whereas the scrap metal you could get for turning in a keg was about $55.
Wow.
So, you know, people would not return their kegs. Restaurants also had, you know, a big problem because a lot of them are in the practice of just leaving their empty kegs, you know, behind the store in an alley, something like that.
Right.
They were getting picked off left and right, you know, for scrap metal, basically.
I need to have alerts on my phone or something when that kind of thing happens.
Right?
I could go make a couple $100 right
when
now.
Steel prices go up. Yeah. I wish I would have known about that because, I mean,
I want to be the driver.
I wound up with a few kegs in my my possession through my college years.
I had some furniture made of kegs in my college years.
If I would have known, I could get some cash for them. I mean,
they're an investment.
Yeah.
I could have changed my keg couch in for a real couch.
Yes.
So next on the list.
It was pretty comfy though.
December 2007, Irish cops busted two guys for stealing 450 kegs of Guinness and other beers from the Guinness Brewery in Dublin.
Sweet.
450
kegs.
New heroes.
They drove a truck into the brewery, hooked it up to the beer trailer, busted out the front gate during rush hour traffic.
So they didn't make it very far.
Most of the beer was not recovered. I don't think they ever caught these guys. They did not recover the beer, valued at about $235,000. Made off with this beer in broad daylight rush hour.
If you took 450 kegs, $200+ thousand worth of Guinness, would you not go back to wherever you're hiding out, fill a swimming pool with some of the excess and yeah. just like backstroke and that stuff?
We're like in the sprinklers.
Yay. I'm not even joking. That's
no,
totally...
no. Yeah. I'm picturing it.
I would get busted because there'd be a picture of me floating in the middle of like one of those little squishy rafts with a cup of Guinness and like in the Guinness pool with a big straw in my mouth.
Surrounded by thick head.
No, we don't, we've established I don't like thick head okay. under my nose. No cannonballs in the Guinness pool. It stirs up a head.
So last one on the list. This one also happened in, let's see, August of 2004. A truck driver carrying 60,000 cans of Moosehead, which is a Canadian beer. Mm-hmm.
Tasty little Canadian beer.
Was transporting it to Mexico and disappeared along with the beer. They recovered the truck in a parking lot in New Brunswick, but did not recover the driver or the beer.
He didn't even make it out of Canada?
No, not really. It doesn't. No. The retail value of the beer was about $100,000. They put out a call to the public, you know, helping to try to recover it.
Saying, hey, there's a whole bunch of missing beer. You win if you find it.
Saying it's going to be easy to spot because it had Spanish labels. It was bound for Mexico. So you've got beer in Canada with Spanish labels on it, probably not going to be hard to find.
Moose Cabeza.
So for years they had no leads on this, and then a couple of empty beer cans of this with these Spanish labels would show up in one place or another, like the almost like the guy was taunting the police. They eventually did find and arrest the driver. However, most of the beer was not recovered intact. You know, it was recovered, destroyed, strewn about the wilderness, basically. He was just dumping it at that point. So
I'm going to one up your Moose Cabeza joke.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the Spanish word for beer?
Cerveza.
Now put it together.
Cerveza Cabeza.
Moose.
Moose Cerveza.
Moose Cabeza Cerveza.
There we go.
That's awesome.
We just got to figure out what patented. The Spanish word for moose is.
Wait, I'm on it. Somebody stall while I look up moose Spanish.
Good luck. There are no moose.
Yeah. They probably don't have a word for that.
No, it's probably moose. Which almost makes
it
funnier.
No. Translate moose to Spanish. It's A-L-C-E. I don't know how to say that, but there you go.
I'll say?
No accent, though.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
A-L-C-E.
Well, for our Spanish.
Oh my God. No, the reason it found it is because someone asked, how do you say moose crossing in Spanish? The answer is, who the hell cares?
Nice.
Awesome.
You draw a picture in a big yellow box. That's what they do.
So I think that's about our list of pretty cool thefts throughout history. And I guess the moral of the story is, sometimes crime does pay. Sometimes you get splattered because you jump out of an airplane because of it. Sometimes you suicide on potassium cyanide. So
yeah. Sometimes you end up in prison in Belgium.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes you're the king of keys and you've never been recovered because you're a total freaking pimp.
So I guess the moral is if you've got a very cool nickname, then you're probably doing all right. The rest of you should probably leave it to the professionals.
On that note...
Scene?
Sure.
Yeah.